This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 294, where today CJ and I are going to catch up on the news, recorded live March the 7th, 2019.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
Mr. Johnson.
Hey man, how's it going?
It's going very good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good actually. No, sorry, I've been watching a lot of South Park and I can't get it out of my head.
We just riffed on about it for quite a bit. I got to go back and watch some of these.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm totally addicted.
Oh, man.
It's great.
Hey, it's been a while since have been able to do one of these shows together.
Yeah, we've done a couple of solo shows. I had Todd Baginski last week. We talked about Power Apps, and then you did a solo show the week before that with a bunch of news and info. So it's nice to see you again.
Yeah, man. It's good to see you, too. So what have you been up to lately?
I went to Disneyland with my kids, which is like a bit of a double-edged sword. I think I mentioned it last week very briefly. Yeah, really, really fun, but I totally wanted to stab myself in the face with pencils at the end of it. Like it was, the crowds and the people, and you just saw from head to toe from walking a ton every day and being on your feet all day. But we had such a great time. The kids had a blast.
It's the happiest, sad place on earth.
Yeah, I think my wife looked at her phone to look at steps, and it's not very accurate on iPhone, but we did about, I think, an average of 6 to 7 miles a day walking, which is great because, you know, you don't eat very well while you're there, so just as well we're walking a bunch. But after 3 or 4 days on your feet, I was ready to be done, so.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, other than that, quite a bit of work stuff going on. I won't get into the minutiae of that, but this is my first MVP summit coming up, which I'm quite excited about.
That's right. Have we talked about it on the show that you got an MVP award in the last, what?
I don't think so.
Months,
I don't know. I can't remember if I mentioned that.
Welcome to the SharePoint MVP world.
Oh, I'm Azure MVP, dude. It's a totally different world.
That's okay. But,
I am interested in... I've attended a bunch of MVP summits before, but only from the Microsoft side, never from an attendee side. And so it's going to be a whole different experience for me. Be interesting.
Yeah. Are you going to be doing more stuff on the Azure side? Because, I mean, I know that you guys, as a work-wise, you use a lot of Azure, but you also are really heavy on the, I guess, the Office side because of Graph.
Office side, yeah. I checked out all the sessions and just added a bunch of stuff to my calendar and favorited a bunch of sessions. And it looks like a pretty much a 50-50 mix between stuff on the Graph and Office side and Azure side. So I'll be running around campus, I think, going back and forth. Yeah, because you're right. I'm really interested in a bunch of Azure topics, especially around containers and compute and those sorts of things, and some of the dev topics that they're doing on the Azure side. But then also a bunch on the Office side around Graph and Office development and Office 365 development, I should say. So I'm definitely going to be wearing a couple of different hats. Yeah, I'm kind of excited about it. It's also nice that I don't have to travel for it because I get to sleep in my own bed every night. Well, at least most nights.
I was going to say,
sounds a lot worse now I think about it.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute.
That's not what I meant.
Did they give you a hotel room?
No, well, yes, I could have got one, but I opted not. I opted not to sign up for a hotel room because that seems a bit like...
I don't know, man. I mean, as late as some of the discussions go and stuff, I'm glad that it's not where I live because I know it'd be so disruptive coming home and everything. So it's just, I like that it's away. At least from my perspective, I'm glad that it's away.
I'm glad that it's not away just because I've been doing a bunch of travel recently and I'm glad to be staying at home. But yeah, there are cons of that, like late nights and might as well just be in a hotel room anyway. But anywho, yeah, so we're going to compare and contrast what each of us are interested in going and hearing about, I think, at some stage, which would be kind of cool. But it'll be nice to spend a couple of days in deep discussions about all sorts of different things. So I'm looking forward to it, actually. It's going to be fun.
It's a fun week. It's intense. It's, for me, it's very intense. I mean, I'll be in all those graph sessions as well. But then of course, you know, my focus is going to be on the office dev side, a lot of the SharePoint framework-y kind of stuff. But then what I like about it is it's very intellectually draining. You're thinking like very critical, very challenging thinking going forward, because it's a lot of serious, you know, things that you got to focus on and thinking forward. And I mean, that's, a lot of people end up going to it just to give feedback to Microsoft, but a lot of people too are thinking about it in the context of their own businesses and the things that they do. And so how is this going to affect me, and how should I plan for this and all that? And then you turn around and then there's the evening, you know, the hallway track. And the next thing you know, that turns into a mix of play hard a lot, a mix of more work discussions during play hard. I mean, that's the hardest part of it to me, is when you're still working with some people from the product teams, the engineering teams or marketing teams, and there's booze being served. You're in a loud setting. It's not structured. People have been drinking and you're still quote unquote on the clock. And it's...
Yeah, I gotcha.
It's exhausting to me. I turn around and go from summit straight to a small business conference in Vegas immediately afterwards. So I've got like... There's an event the week in between, and I'm really tempted to go to it. It's down in Austin, Texas. But I'm also thinking that a day in a hotel or 2 days in a hotel and not ever leaving is, there's a really strong appeal to that right now.
Yeah. Are you going to be going straight to this other event, or are you hanging out in Seattle?
No. I leave, I think, on Friday or Saturday morning. I'm going to Vegas. So it's a...
Nice.
Summit all week. And then I go to Vegas. It's a little conference called MicroConf. It's about 200 people. That's for people like me that are companies that are bootstrapped or self-funded or whatever. And it's mostly, the audience is mostly developers, and the topic is mostly marketing and business development. So it's stuff that's not necessarily in my wheelhouse, but it's developers talking about marketing and so doing things like Facebook ads and lead generation and stuff like that. So I've gone to it for the last few years. It's really, really useful. It too is very much the same way as MVP Summit, where it's just very deep discussions during the day. And maybe even, it's even more intense for me, because you don't normally live the marketing side, or it doesn't come as natural to you.
Gotcha.
It forces me to be more, to think more, forces me to work more. And then there's the evening discussions. And I mean, there's the added aspect to it that, you know, I know a lot of our listeners would fall into this crowd, into this cohort as well, that, you know, you and I go to a conference, like we go to Summit, and we would have, or go to like a SharePoint conference or Ignite or Build, and you and I would have absolutely no problem finding friends to be able to connect with and go get a drink or go get dinner or have lunch. There's no like a random person. At this conference though, you've got to really put yourself out there and work hard to network and everything. And that, for me, that just naturally doesn't come easy to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so that takes a lot more energy.
Totally different crowd.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same people at every show. Often the shows we go speak at and go and attend, a lot of the same speakers and things are at each of the shows, right? So you've sort of got that familiar crowd. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or there's an attendee that recognizes you and they want to come talk to you or something. And they've been seeking, have a specific question to ask. Whereas you go to this conference, I'm like, I don't have a whole lot to offer and nobody's going to come up and talk to me. So I've got to reach out and talk to them. And it's like, I'm just not used to it.
Yeah, fair enough. Some other stuff exciting has been going on this week.
Yes, it has, man.
I look at your face, little excited guy.
I was traveling last week for business, got my first freezing rain, ice on a car, ice on roads experience. That sucks.
Ever.
But, ever.
Ever?
Here's how bad it is. So I'm in St. Louis. And when I land in St. Louis, I get in the rental car and they give you, they have a stick, like a snow stick or whatever you call it. And it's got a brush on one side and the other side's got a scraper.
Yep.
So a buddy of mine lives in St. Louis. And of course, I'm just trying to have fun, you know, mess with them a bit. We always like, you know, poke at each other. And I took a picture of the stick and I sent him it to him. I said, what is this? My Ferguson stick? For all the rides. but then on Thursday morning, he's like, hey, you know how to use your Ferguson stick on your windshield? And I'm like, no.
Can I get out of here now?
Yes. So it took me like 20 minutes to scrape the ice off my windshield. I didn't have a clue what I was doing.
Nice.
Get in the car to leave and realize that, Anyway, so I get home and I decide not to stay up for it. But SpaceX, I guess all of the, not you and I saying this, but the other people saying this, the big watchers of this stuff, they're saying it ushered in a new era of spaceflight where SpaceX launched their Dragon 2 crew capsule, which will be the first vehicle, or it has been the first vehicle that has been launched from American soil or American launch that's connected with the space station that is going to be able to send humans up to ISS. This was just a demo mission to make sure everything worked. And there was a lot of first time stuff that it did, man, seeing that it can hold four people in it and seeing the, how spacious it was. Can you compare that to a Soyuz? Is like, oh my God. Oh, yeah.
It looks like a multi-room hotel suite in comparison to Soyuz.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we're going to have you sit in the bathroom on an international flight. Whereas, no, we're going to put you in one of those Emirates suites.
Yeah, the apartment. Yeah. So, no, exactly. I was in Bend, Oregon, skiing with mates, and we were out late one night, and I got home, and I was just flicking through, you know, my phone, as you do, and I saw the live video on YouTube of the launch, and so I managed to catch the launch.
Oh, yeah, sorry, it's late for you.
Which was pretty cool, but I didn't see the docking, because the docking was the next day at a later time. So I watched the docking on YouTube, but really cool to see progress being made with the crew program. Being able to launch astronauts from U.S. soil again will be pretty awesome.
It's definitely going to be cool. So there was one thing that was really cool. I was trying to find the link for this. Some dude on Twitter posted, Elon Musk retweeted it. When it docked, he put the Interstellar soundtrack on it. So you can see it coming in.
Oh, it was nice.
But yeah, so I guess tomorrow, which would be March the 8th, is when they undock. And undock. Mm-hmm. Return to Earth. So it'll be interesting to see it. Now, the next mission is going to be cool. The next one is to test the abort system. And so my understanding is they're going to reuse the same Falcon 9 booster that they used to put up the Israeli moon lander two missions ago.
Yeah.
They're going to, when it disconnects and what do you call it? The second stage is going to have a malfunction and explode. And demo mission 2, or the same capsule they're using for this mission right now, is going to just jettison away and measure all the stuff that happens with it. But they're going to apparently blow up the second stage. So, yeah.
Ooh, that'll be fun to watch.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So
nice. Well, cool. We'll have to keep an eye out for that one.
Yeah, very cool stuff.
On a slightly different topic, before we get into the meat of the show.
Interstellar thing. Oh, no, that's different. All right.
Before we get into the meat of the show, just wanted to have a quick call out to our fantastic sponsors, Raygun. And, you know, you normally hear a spot from them or, you know, from us, but about them on the show. But I just wanted to make a quick shout out that on March the 19th at 2 p.m. Pacific time, they have a webinar coming up, which I think would be pretty interesting to our developer listeners out there, called Building Blazingly Fast Software with .NET. So it's all about performance and writing performant code and some of the lessons Raygun have learned along their way of building their cloud service, I imagine, on how to go about building really, really quick code, especially in .NET. These guys are really interesting. They know their stuff. And so if you're interested at all, the link is in the show notes, and we also tweeted about it. It's something I want to go watch for sure, get some tips and tricks on writing performant code.
Yeah, you definitely need that. It's a great thing that they're doing this. You totally can get me. Really, you're going to let that just slide?
I totally do need it.
Yeah, I do too. No,
it's cool. Infinite while loops are bad. Okay.
Okay. Or the guy that wrote the whole.
Oh, no, that's not fucking good. All right. Yes.
All right. What do you say we dive into the meat of the show? Because we got some news today.
Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens Conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th and 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom. With keynotes from Microsoft's Jeff Teper and Tony Towns-Whitley, and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research, this event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Microsoft Office 365 and SharePoint investments, and hear about the success and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts.
All right, CJ, we have a slew of news for our show today. I know last week you talked to Todd Baginski about Power Apps. So why don't we go back, cover some of the news that's happened lately, and we got some stuff we're going to go kind of quick, some stuff we're going to spend a little more time on. I'm curious, though, you've got some stuff that you found related to Windows here, some epic news about open sourcing?
Yeah, exactly. So this possibly is the biggest news of the year. And I don't say that lightly because this is going to really blow your socks off. But Microsoft are open sourcing the Windows Calculator app.
Huh.
On GitHub, and they're taking pull requests.
What? So, what?
Oh, yeah. It's like different open source for Microsoft. It's like actual open source. So they've published Calculator. Needless to say, or maybe I'm stating the obvious here, it's under the Microsoft org under WAC Calculator.
Make sure we put a link to the show notes because we're going to forget that one.
Yeah, that's a real shocker. It's interesting because they're saying it's a great way to learn about the latest technologies like Universal Windows platforms, XAML, Azure Pipelines, Fluent App Design, all that. And they're actually taking PRs and stuff, which, well, I think their goal is to take PRs anyway. So, yes, they're going to be dealing with open contribution. So that's pretty cool.
Very cool.
I mean, it is only Calculator, but hey, it's a step forward. The other one is less concrete, but just sort of a bit of a rumor and thing flying out there, which is there have been some leaked screenshots of the new Chromium-based Edge browser that's coming out up on NeoWin and Windows Central. So if you're interested in what Microsoft's next browser attempt looks like, you can go check that out.
Yeah, I love the way you just said that.
Next browser attempt at a browser?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll take off. We will see, but
I'm not rooting against it, okay? So I'm not rooting against it, but I'm just saying that the track record of Microsoft with browsers has been bad.
It's all been downhill since IE4. Let's put it that way.
I was going to say 5, but I'll go with 4. I don't see what the appeal of it is. I mean, somebody was talking to me about this the other day. I said, it's really good. Somebody has actually been playing with it. It's really good. I'm like, oh, that's great. But I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Enterprises will care because there is forced upon them. You know what? Here's what I hope. I hope this browser is going to kill the previous Edge in IE11.
Yeah.
If it does that, if it kills IE11, I'm happy, right? I'm not going to...
I agree.
I would like to see, are they going to make this cross-platform? Is it just going to be a Windows thing?
Who knows? Maybe they'll... Remember when they made IE for Mac many years back?
Yes. Remember that? Briefly.
Yeah. Maybe they'll do that again. Anyway, that's my Windows news. Calculator's open source and Chromium Edge browser is leaked.
Hey, have you heard this news about how Microsoft had a little bit of, I don't know, kerfuffle with some of their employees?
Yeah.
Microsoft has a contract with the United States Department of Defense and working with their new HoloLens. I can't say it. HoloLens 2. They should have called it the HoloLens. That... a bunch of employees, like, was it 50 or 200 employees, signed some petition saying we shouldn't help build military stuff. Stop.
Yep. Yeah. So Microsoft did a $450 million deal, I think it is, with USDOD for HoloLens 2. And these employees have signed a petition saying we shouldn't help build like militarized or whatever you call it solutions. Mm. I can see both sides of this coin, right? Like Microsoft's done deals with governments and in particular the Department of Defense in the US for decades, right? The DOD in the US, I think to this date, is still the largest single account that Microsoft has in the world. I remember my first Microsoft conference ever back in like 2003 when I first joined. And the account manager or the account exec, she got a Rolex from Bill Gates on stage after signing the DOD enterprise agreement, I think it was, which took like 10 months to negotiate and all this sort of stuff. And it was huge. It was like the biggest deal I'd ever done at the time. Microsoft's done business with DoD for years, decades and decades. I don't have a problem with that. They use Windows and all sorts of things. They use Office and all sorts of things. Air Force uses PowerPoint like no other organization I've ever seen in my life. Like, they do everything in PowerPoint. It's bizarre. But on the other side of the coin, and I think where these employees are coming from is, it's not just selling HoloLens to the DoD. It's selling HoloLenses to the DoD and working with them on a warfighting solution. So it's like actively helping them build something versus just selling them technology. I could see why they might be a little upset about that.
Well, okay. So I can understand why, you know, a bunch of...
What if it was a different government?
That'd be different.
What if...
That may be different. Probably feel differently, to be honest with you, but...
Because they sell Windows to crap loads of other DoDs, right? Lots of other departments of defense or the military in other countries. But as far as I'm aware, they don't actively help them build warfighting solutions like that would be used.
You know what? I don't think you can do that, actually. I think that what is that law? There's a certain law that says you can't do that without congressional approval. A U.S. company can't sell weapons or... something without some sort of a congressional approval thing. I can't remember what it's called. There's a specific acronym for it. So to me, the military and war is a political instrument. And if they are working with their own country's military to make the military more efficient or more better training, or I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that. I think they're a private business. Shareholders are perfectly justified in being able to voice their opinions. Employees are perfectly happy to quit their job and go somewhere else. It's a free country. You can do whatever you want. And I don't think that if they were doing something that was seen as something so incredibly negative by the majority of the people that were out there, you know, I'm sure that when they signed this agreement, because it's such a big contract, there's a bit of a debate that probably went on behind the doors at Microsoft and was like, how would this be perceived if this was made public?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I think it's just topical right now as well, because Google got raked through the coals recently for this with the drone targeting stuff. So maybe it's just a little more juicy right now because it's kind of topical.
You'll see like a social movement go on when once one thing happens, it seems like there's a bunch of other dominoes that seem to fall. And I doubt this would have even made the news made as much news had that whole thing at Google not happened.
Yeah. I guess it made the news because it was such a big amount of money, perhaps. Maybe that's also part of the reason. You know,
there's a bunch of news items in it, right? There's a bunch of news items in it. It's a lot of money at the time. It's Microsoft. It's DoD. It's the new HoloLens. And it's a warfighting thing.
Sure. Just all culminated in the news.
Good clickbait.
For sure.
Hey, did you see what one of our fantastic sponsors did just recently? They picked up their second acquisition of the year.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
It is, yeah. So,
go ahead.
Do you know more about it? I don't know. I know a little bit about it, or like what the implications are of this, because I wasn't familiar with the company when it was announced.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so Nintex bought a company called EnableSoft, which make a automation product called Foxtrot. And I don't know if you're familiar with this acronym RPA, but robotic process automation is kind of like a topical area that a lot of people are discussing right now. Foxtrot RPA is a product from EnableSoft, and Nintex bought EnableSoft. And so what it does is, you know, if you're familiar with Nintex workflow product, how it lets you automate business processes, Foxtrot is kind of similar, but it does it from like an end user's perspective. So like, my understanding is that it's in its very simplest form is UI automation. So imagine you've got a database full of customer records, and you've got a CRM that you're moving to, which has a terrible API and no integration with your custom database. You could use Foxtrot RPA to automate taking each row out of your database and manually inserting it into your new CRM by automating its UI. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So go through my junk folder and block these all, and find an email, take the first email, right click, block it, delete it, then repeat until there's nothing left.
Exactly. Yeah. And those are obviously the most simple of cases, but you can imagine things like people submitting PDFs, right? And you taking the content out of those PDFs in certain locations and putting some of it into one system, some of it into another system, and maybe emailing somebody to say a new form has come in and hitting submit on some other business process that starts, right? It's roboticizing what somebody would normally do manually to make it more efficient and fast.
Glad you just talked about it because I didn't know that much about it. That's really cool.
I'm probably doing it a terrible disservice, but it's my understanding of it.
That's a really cool. I can definitely see the value in that because you run into this a lot of times. Does this service have an API or no, you're going to be rate limited or something like that? It's like, I would like for a user just be able to basically do a UI screen recording and use the UI screen recording capabilities to automate a bunch of processes.
Yeah. And so your systems might not have APIs, right? There might be on-prem systems that you can't get to from the cloud, for example, or something like that. And so this kind of gets you around all of that. I'm not familiar with like all of their use cases of where they really sing in the past, but it's pretty sweet to see some more excitement in the ecosystem around workflow and consolidation. And yeah, and obviously Nintex are a great supporter of the show. So yeah. By the way, we're not being paid to talk about this acquisition.
No, it's just news.
We wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, it's a big deal. I mean, it's the second company that they've, since they had an ownership change last year, and the second acquisition that this new ownership has had. And so it's newsworthy, I think.
Their first one was a company called ProMap, which is a New Zealand company, or was a New Zealand company, I should say, which is all about mapping processes, like from a business analyst sort of point of view. So, lots of interesting stuff going on in the workflow world by the looks of it.
Very cool.
If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously. If you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com.
All right, we have some switching back into the Microsoft and Office 365 world.
Yo, dog, I want a social network inside my social network.
Well, I got something for you today, CJ. Yammer is now inside of Teams and its own Yammer tab. So we decided to put a community in a community.
That's right.
But wait, it gets better. Sorry. Yeah, there's more. You know that you can have an Office 365 group that is teamified or a group of, I guess you can have it, and you can have a SharePoint team that's been groupified. Now, you know that there's also a way for you to link up Yammer with an Office 365 group. So do I have a full circle now between Yammer is now inside of Teams, which Teams has an Office 365 group, which I can link to Yammer. So if I post a message to one, does it just start spinning around like crazy and going in all these different places?
It's like social network inception, man.
That's exactly what
I tweeted this out last night I tweeted this out when I saw this last night and I said, this is for when you need a social network inside your social network, ? Facepalm. Is this Yammer's last dying gasp as it struggles for relevance? I mean, I've said this before, but unless I'm totally missing something, and maybe I am, I'll plead dumb on that quite regularly, so why not again? But like, unless I'm totally missing something, this is beyond flogging a dead horse. This is like dismembering a dead horse and sending it to your relatives. Isn't it? I mean, you're... Like, I just don't get it. Like... Good grief, give up already.
I don't get why you would do this. I don't see what the value is in this. I mean, why would you post a message? Why do you want to see what's going on in one community from another community? I don't understand it. I'm making fun of it. you make fun of the things that you don't understand. And that's very well the case right now. I don't understand this.
I just don't understand it. Yeah. But
I don't know. Maybe, is it the last nail in the Yammer coffin? I don't know. I don't know if it is. If we'll ever have I don't even know if they have a coffin yet.
The analogy to me is like when you used to have a PST with old mails that you just want to see, and so you attach it into Outlook for one last look. Maybe it's the same. Maybe you're attaching your Yammer group, whatever you call it, channel? Is it a group or a channel? Anyway, maybe you're attaching your Yammer channel into your new Teams team so that you can check out your old messages or something. Like, the mind boggles.
This just seems like a mess.
I honestly felt last night, I had this thought. I was like, Microsoft should just sell Yammer. Like, I was just thinking, why don't they just sell it? Get rid of it. Lots of custom. Why not?
Once you company data is in those, I mean, how would you?
Microsoft bought it. There's a bunch of company data in it.
But their like privacy and all that stuff was very different than when Microsoft changed it.
Yeah, I don't know about the legalities of it, but I was like, you know, if plenty of people are still using it, and so you don't want to shut it off because that'll piss a bunch of customers off that aren't either ready for Teams or are just so you have so much content in there. Then why not just carve it off and sell it? I just feel like it's distracting their focus from where they should be spending time, which is in Teams. They've made a bet on Teams. It's like, it's done.
Let's just stick with it.
Yeah, and instead, they're running around hand-wavy, talking about all these freaking loops that make no sense to anybody outside of the echo chamber, and are like, I don't need more goddamn loops, AC. What I need is clarity. Pardon my friend.
I'm going to help you with that. I have a new task system for you.
Sweet Jesus, no. Oh, good grief.
It's in Kaizal.
I feel my ranty level is on the rise here, and it's not good.
Just to make you feel a bit better, did you see that Office got some new icons?
So actually, this is really funny. Omar, if you're listening, I apologize in advance. But Omar Shaheen, who we've had on the show before, who's director of product management, I think that's right, senior director, can't remember, product management on OneDrive and SharePoint. I had lunch with him the other day, and he's a super nice guy, such a really good dude. And it was nothing about work, but we actually didn't talk much about work at all, which is great. But he gives me one of the new SharePoint stickers with the new icon. And I was like, oh, is this Slack's new icon?
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. I was just joking.
Oh, my God.
But I was just joking. But yeah, his amused face was pretty entertaining.
What do you think about them? What do you think about the new icons?
They look nice, but I really don't care.
I don't understand some of it. I mean, they don't feel... I know that there's a whole design blog, and I know this whole design blog goes in the Office design blog, and they go into explaining the thought process and stuff behind it. But I look at it, and it just doesn't feel like there was much thought process behind it. Because
I'm sure there was so much thought process that it was too much.
I think there was too much. And so almost all of the apps have a letter associated with them. And Outlook has the O, and then OneNote has an N, which it's kind of odd to me. But then OneDrive has no letter. And I saw Jeff Tepper's tweet about why SharePoint has those three circles and how what those actually map back to like a really old SharePoint kind of thing. And one of them is hub sites and one of them is collaboration and one of them is this other thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, the icon is either supposed to be, and PowerPoint looks like a chart. PowerPoint looks like something out of Excel. It doesn't look like slides. Hmm. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that is curious. I like the consistency between everything, but yeah, apart from the no letter on OneDrive, but anywho, just across the apps. I can't believe we've been sucked into talking about the icon vortex.
It was part just to kind of needle Mark Rackley.
Yeah, Mark, if you're listening, haha. Yeah, new icons. I mean, yeah, they look nice to me, whatever. New icons, yes, we've spoken about that. Hey, also, I saw there was this new Windows 10 Office application, which sort of looks like an app you install and it gives you access to all your recently used documents and all that stuff. So it's sort of like it's a native app. I'm pretty sure it's an Electron app, actually. it wraps some web stuff, but apparently there's some things you can get to offline. It sort of wraps the office.com experience in an app for the desktop. I guess where this comes from is lots of people, Google or Bing, Office 365 login or Office 365, and then they click the first result, which is usually an ad for Office 365. And so it makes me wonder whether Microsoft's trying to reduce its AdWords spend on the keyword Office 365 with just customers that are looking for the login screen. I'm not joking. Like, there is a huge percentage of people that have no idea how to get to the Office 365 login page. And so they Google for Office 365. And if you do that, let's do it right now. Hold on. Google.com, type in Office 365. And the first thing that comes up, oh no, look at that. It doesn't look like it's an ad anymore. I got the Office 365 login link. So maybe that's, did you get an ad?
No, I did not get an ad.
Gotcha. Maybe my ad theory is off now. Anyway, it used to be that an ad used to come up and everybody used to click on it. So every login is costing like $8.
No, but actually, you know what? Go Bing Office 365. See if you get what I got.
Let me just Google for Bing. Hold on. I shouldn't joke because I use Bing. Yeah, look at that. It's an ad.
First hit for me is an ad. So maybe they're trying to reduce their Bing spend.
Yeah.
Said no one ever.
Yeah. Burn. I like Bing. Except for Maps now. Bing Maps used to be better, but now I like Google more. Anyway.
I got nothing against Bing. I wasn't trying to be like that. It's just your nature is Google. And so I'm just like,
You know that like the number one search term in Bing for like the last 10 years has been Google. I'm not joking. It's not a joke. Like every single year, Google is the number one search term on Bing. Because it comes up, you know, you get a new computer or whatever, you open IE, and it's got the default search experience as Bing. And people are like, oh, I need to Google for something. And so they Google on Bing and then get to Google and then they can actually search.
You know, I wonder,
You know, it goes to show how people think, right? Like, they don't think I need to search for something. They go, I need to Google for something.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, you have kids too, and you hear kids talking about it as well, and teachers talking to kids on how to go find stuff. You just Google it.
Yeah, Google it.
At some point, you have to wonder, you step back and just going, when is it time not to invest money in something that just isn't, is it useful to invest in Bing search?
Microsoft thinks so.
Well, clearly. But I mean, I wonder how that discussion always goes. I mean, when you are...
Bing gets a lot of traffic, strangely a lot of traffic, more than you'd probably expect. They make a lot of money from search traffic. It powers a lot of experiences around the web as well, like in other places, and on Windows and on mobile apps and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's a huge business. It's still, I believe, over $1 billion business just in ad traffic.
Should have kept my mouth shut on that one then.
Well, I don't know. I mean, my information is old, but that's my understanding of it. It's surprisingly large. Like, they do a bunch of content syndication for other things as well. Anywho, cloud news.
So we have one here on an FHIR server for Azure, open source project for cloud-based health solutions. So this is an open source project. It's on GitHub from the Microsoft Healthcare Group. And what it does is it empowers Azure developers with software that supports and exchange management of data in the cloud via the FHIR specification, which I know there's a whole bunch of regulations and guidance and stuff, HIPAA guidance and how data is going to be shared and secured and preserved and stuff. And this is just making life easier, providing an open source solution for companies that want to be able to leverage this.
Yeah, it looks like it's pretty heavily dev focused, I think, as well. I don't know much about it, but yeah.
There's a lot of AI stuff here. Scripts and ARM templates available for immediate provisioning in the cloud. Scripts are available to map Azure AD and enable RBAC. Mm. It includes, quote, an easy button that deploys the FHIR server for Azure into nearly any public region. Hmm. Open source project playing with FHIR.
Not really my bag, but interesting that they're doing stuff in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically for healthcare, right? So there is another piece of news here, which I found fascinating. Well, it's not news. It's a Twitter thread, which I found absolutely fascinating. There's a guy called Hemant Mohapatra, I think his name is. I might be mispronouncing his name. We'll link to it in the show notes. Who's tweeted things saying, so Lyft is paying $8 million per month to AWS, almost $100 million a year. Each ride costs 14 cents in AWS rent. I keep hearing they could build their own DC and save. My early days at Google Cloud heard the same thing from customers. At scale, owning is cheaper. It wasn't. They all came around. And then the rest of his thread goes on about the sort of the economics of what it really means to run your own effectively cloud service in your own data centers and sort of the economics behind that. And it is kind of interesting seeing from somebody who worked on the stuff earlier on at Google, what it's really like to run a cloud scale service or data center and the cost of all of that. And basically, there are only a few people who've made it work. Netflix, he calls out Netflix and Dropbox, who we've spoken about. I think we spoke about Dropbox building their own hardware and doing their own data center migrations a couple of years ago. But few rare examples of this working in parts, Netflix and Dropbox. When companies reach internet scale and have to do a lot more customization on the stack, running their own infrastructure might make sense, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I just thought it was really interesting, the economics about running data centers these days, some interesting insights there, and what customers aren't thinking about. You know, you might have a CIO or a CTO or whatever who's like, oh, we'll just run it ourselves. It'll be way cheaper. Throw a few servers in, and that's certainly not the case. Yeah, great thread. We'll link to it. You can read more about the ins and outs of building your own and running your own data centers.
So last week when I was in St. Louis, I was teaching a private class with a company, and they are doing an on-prem deployment of SharePoint 2019. Without disclosing too much, they provide a service and their customers all are going to be on this new SharePoint deployment. But because of the business that they're in, nothing goes in the cloud. And it was an interesting discussion on, I was just generally curious, not questioning, but more and not, you know, interrogating them, but it was more just curious, you know, so why is it that you're not going into 365? Why is it that you feel that you have to stand up this brand new deployment using SharePoint 2019? It was very interesting to hear their discussion on it. This was shared, you know, right after that, right after I was at that event. And so I was reading through this and I sent it over to some of them as well. And I was like, it's an interesting perspective to hear from people that do this. And then of course, Steven Sinofsky actually had a really good like response to this whole thread about, you know, chiming in with the whole like, yeah, we need to, that people always think that they can do it cheaper, but they
ultimately can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, hey, CJ, do you want to, we've been going on for quite a bit here. How about we move on to some picks? We got some good picks this week. So sound good?
Just do it.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
All right, CJ, we got a couple picks here. I'm going to let you go first. Or you know what? Let's have our listener pick go first.
Yeah, so, sure. You picked this week.
Our listener pick is by a gentleman named Mark Heath. And Mark posts a pretty cool little thing that he built that he talks about with using a extension that he's created and leveraging it using the Azure CLI. And it's essentially setting up a way for you to put a self-destruct setting on Azure resource groups. So if you want to go through and like play with a bunch of stuff for like a demo or for a conference, or you want to try some stuff out, you can set up a self-destruct on a resource group. And this thing will run at a scheduled time and destroy all the resources in that resource group, as well as the resource group when you say so.
Wow. That's cool.
That is pretty cool. I mean, you could very easily just go AZ group create, give it a name, give it a region, and then say --self-destruct 30 minutes.
Cool. Yeah, this is great for demos, I imagine, right? Where you create a resource group and you're like, self-destruct in 60 minutes because I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm. And then cool. the thing even goes, you can say AZ space self-destruct list. And then it lists out, here's all the ones that I'm watching and I'm going to blow away for you.
And it's built using Logic Apps. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. As well as
self-destruct really... logic's built in Logic Apps. Huh. That's really cool.
So Mark, this is a great link. Thank you very much for submitting it. We will be in touch to send you a solo key. And for actually all of those people who have picked up a solo key, go check them on GitHub because there's an issue thread that goes around where there have been some fixes to the firmware on the keys and they explain how to go about address, how to get your...
Ooh, I want to do that.
Yeah, because there have been some... I think it's version 1.1.1, I think is what's out, but there were some issues with Dropbox. There were some issues with Chrome and it's not issues with the solo key. It's more with the protocol and with these different implementations of it is my understanding. And so the update for the firmware has like workarounds to these other problems that are out there.
Gotcha.
So,
Yeah, cool.
All right, Mr. Johnson, would you like to do your pick next?
Sure. You know how earlier in the episode, I've been watching a lot of South Park?
Yes.
There's a really cool documentary I want to point everybody to. It's called 6 Days to Air, The Making of South Park from 2011. And basically the synopsis is the animated series South Park has one of the most ambitious schedules in broadcast television. Each episode is written, recorded, animated, and delivered in just 6 days. And this is a documentary about the making of a South Park episode. And it will blow your brains. It is just incredible. As a content creator, watching how this happens, this real mixture of pressure and creativity and being productive, it's a very, very interesting look into something I knew nothing about. And it's absolutely hilarious, as you would expect.
You were sharing some of this with me prior to the show that I won't repeat on our show.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. I can't wait to watch this.
Yeah. I was just in fits of tears all the way through it. These guys are some of the funniest dudes on the planet, I think. And to do it all in 6 days, it's kind of like SNL, right? SNL produced shows in a week. But this is an animated TV series as well. It's like, you got to animate it. And fortunately, it's pretty basic animation. That's how they're able to get away with it. But they also do it in a season is only a set number of episodes. And so you'd think they'd spend all year building a season. Oh no, they do it like in real time. So they build and make an episode and then air it the day it's finished. It's incredible.
That's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. That's pretty cool though. All right.
Yeah.
Good show, man. Have you heard of a crypto exchange called Quadrica CX?
No.
All right. Quadrica CX, they had some financial issues. They filed for, they had over $190 million in debt. They were unable to find or access additional money and they filed for creditor protection earlier this year in January. But they had holdings of around $137 million in cryptocurrency that belonged to about 115,000 customers. Now, here's the interesting side of this. The CEO of the company, a guy named Gerald Cotton, he was the founder of it, and he was thought to have had sole access to the funds and all the coins that were exchanged on it. He was the only one that had the wallet. He was the only one that had the password. He had everything. And then he died.
Or so we're led to believe.
Exactly. But in here, it gets really interesting and sticky. So people are like, wait a minute. So this guy died. There's $137 million that was out there. And nobody could access it except for him. So all these people have lost all this money that's been tied up in this cryptocurrency stuff. And I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Well, Ernest Young was able to secure his laptop, his home computer, and the USB keys and his home computer. And using the public blockchain records, it determined that the wallets it thought to contain millions were emptied in April of 2018, 8 months before his death.
Huh.
They found other issues too, such as Quadriga kept limited books and records. It never reported financials. 14 user accounts were initially created under various aliases, traded on the exchange, and withdrew cryptocurrency to addresses not tied to Quadriga. Oops.
Oopie.
Doesn't sound like this story is really finished, though. I mean, it's kind of like, wait a minute now. Well, where did all this money go back in April?
Yeah, right?
Can you find it? And
surely the whole promise of blockchain is that all the transactions are in the open. So they've got to be able to know where the money is, where those Bitcoins are.
And you can find that out, but you can't tell who owns that. Like, I can see where the money is, and I can see the account that has it and where it went, but I may not be able to tell that that account is tied to Chris Johnson.
Sure, sure. But they can tell that it's been emptied out of these wallets and put in something else.
Yeah.
And then they can tell if that's been taken from there and spent in other places. Like, they could see if that wallet is spending money with some sort of gold buyer or something, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, something like that.
So, interesting. We'll see. Another crypto exchange called Kraken is offering $100,000 for information on where all their money has gone. So somebody fesses up.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
It's like bounty hunting in the digital age.
Exactly, yeah. Reassembling bits and blockchains.
Nice.
Well, that's all the news that's fit for talking about. Not print.
Yeah. Set to print. Yep.
Well, CJ, it's good to meet up again. Good to have another chat with you. And I guess we will meet up again next week. Talk more cloudy stuff. Woohoo. All right, man.
See ya.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.